You're listening to Garden Talk on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to turn our attention to plant diseases. You know, every year it's a little different. There are some that come every year, and then there are others that come and go depending on the weather. And I want to find out what's going on this year. And who better to talk about it than Brian Huddleston, Dr. Death. He is the director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, resides within the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What plant disease questions are on your mind or in your garden? Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Brian Huddleston, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me again.
You know, there's a fungus that I think is so aptly named. It's called the dead man's fingers.
Yep.
I think it's a perfect description of that fungus. But talk about it, and you're seeing a bit more of it this year, as I understand.
Yeah, I've had an inordinate number of questions about dead man's fingers this spring. I occasionally got questions in the past, but this year it seems to be fruiting like crazy. It's a fungus, and the fruiting bodies, basically the mushroom-like part of this fungus, look like fingers. Or I've seen one example, probably the best photo, is where there are five of them coming up underneath from a log, and it looks like five toes of that's been crushed by a log. But they're relatively dark in color, kind of darkish blue to black, oftentimes with a little bit of a gray sort of tip. And they're a spore-producing structure of a fungus. There are several different species. The one I'm most interested in is one called, it's Xylaria is the genus, but Xylaria polymorpha, which is an actual pathogen. It can cause disease. It tends to be a stress-related pathogen, so it's more likely to infect plants that have been under some sort of stress. And I'm wondering, and this is just speculation, but I'm wondering, because we had that really bad drought in 2023, whether that kind of predisposed plants to become infected by this particular fungus. And then we've had a couple of springs, both last year and this year, where we've had a lot of rain, which would tend to stimulate production of the reproductive structures, which are these little blackish fingers that pop up. But the queries I've had, one person in particular had a dog that seemed to like to rummage around and try to eat them, and not necessarily a good thing, because those mushroom-like structures can have some toxins in them that can be toxic to animals and humans as well if you would try to eat them.
Yeah. You wrote a limerick about them in your book, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there is one in there. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but yes, there is a dead man's fingers, something about zinger. That was one of the zingers is one of the rhymes in that particular limerick, as I recall. So, yeah.
Well, just to get off, you're working on another book too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm working on a follow-up to my first limerick book. And the first one was kind of on just different types of plant diseases. And the second one is more limericks describing plant disease management. So I'm about halfway done with the writing and the artwork for that. I think I finished up limerick number 26. I'd like to have another 52 in that book. That may take me a little while to finish, but it is summer now, so it's gotten beyond the point where I can actually work on that. It's time to work on samples in the clinic.
Yeah. Ann in Appleton has a question for you relating to something. Let's go there. Hi, Ann.
Yes, hi. I have peach leaf curl on my peach trees, and I would like to maintain an organic or safe garden. And what could I do and when to treat this?
And maybe you should explain it first, Brian, what it is.
Yeah, peach leaf curl is another fungal disease. It has been absolutely off the scale this year. I haven't seen a year this bad for that particular disease in a long time. Again, it's fungal in nature. The fungus overwinters typically on branches or in the scales of the buds that are waiting around to sprout the following growing season. And once those leaves start to come out, the fungus produces spores that infect. And then you get this kind of seersucker sort of pattern to the leaves. They get very curly and very puckered. Instead of being solid green, it's quite a colorful disease because these infected areas can be kind of reddish or pinkish or kind of salmony or whitish, creamy white. And it can cause a lot of growth distortions when it's really severe. And I've been seeing this year. It can cause some of the leaves to fall off the trees. The thing of it is, once you start seeing all these symptoms, there's nothing you can do about it. It's too late. And you really have to deal with it after the trees have defoliated in the fall. And the recommendation are some fungicide sprays. Since the caller was specifically interested in more organic sorts of treatments, the active ingredients that I would recommend for control with these sprays would be copper. So you need a copper containing fungicide that's labeled for use on edible fruit crops. Not all copper containing materials will be labeled for edible plants. Some are for ornamentals only. So that's one caveat if you want to use spray treatments. And you make a treatment to the branches and the buds of the tree. You can do that in the fall. You can also wait until the spring just before the new leaf buds start to swell and do a treatment then. And that should help control it. Sometimes when the disease is super severe, I'll actually recommend that people do both a fall treatment and a spring treatment just to kind of to try to knock back this fungus. There's also a variation of this disease that occurs on plums, but it's a slightly different species of the fungus than the one that causes peach leaf curl. It causes a disease called plum pockets, and that variant of the fungus only infects the fruits of the plum trees. So if you ever have a plum where you get these really large and spongy kind of hollow fruits, that's the kind of the peach leaf curl variant on plums. Again, it's called plum pockets. And if you want to read more about this, I have a fact sheet on this disease on my clinic website. And that's pddc.wisc.edu. Other things to keep in mind if you're having problems with this disease this year, and particularly if you're getting a lot of leaf loss, would be to make sure you're giving the trees enough water, about an inch of water per week. You want to reduce the stress in the trees as they're losing those leaves. You may want to give the trees a little bit of a shot of nitrogen, but make sure you don't do that too late in the growing season, not after about August 1st. If you apply nitrogen late in the growing season, it tends to keep trees from going dormant properly, and then you can end up with winter injury. And we've already seen a lot of winter injury from this past winter anyway, so you don't want to contribute to that by fertilizing at the wrong time.
I was wondering about cleaning up in the fall. If you have like a peach leaf curl, is it good to get rid of those leaves and everything around it?
For that specific disease, it doesn't make any difference because that's not where the fungus is hanging out over the winter. It's on the branches. But
okay.
For most leaf diseases that I deal with, yes, doing good cleanup of that infected leaf debris that's on the ground is a good thing to try to do. Sometimes people don't want to do that in the fall because they want to keep that debris there as an overwintering site for beneficial insects. But if you don't do it then, you really need to get out in the spring before the trees leaf out and get rid of that material, because otherwise there are going to be spores generated in that leaf litter that are going to reinfect your trees. And one of the diseases that I'm starting to see a fair number of samples come in where leaf cleanup is important is apple scab. If you've got an apple or a crabapple tree that's starting to defoliate, then that's probably the disease that you're dealing with. And that fungus hangs out in leaf litter on the ground.
And I want to go back. By the way, Brian's here to answer your questions. So if you have one, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Or email to talk at WPR.org. I wanted to go back to Dead Man's Fingers for just a second.
Sure.
Because I'm not sure, should we be concerned if we spot it in the garden, I guess is the question.
I wouldn't be overly concerned if you see this. It could be causing some problems in some of your trees and shrubs. Again, if they've been stressed, it's more likely colonizing the root system and causing some damage. Unfortunately, once it's infected, there's not anything you can really do about it. If you have animals that are curious about these fingers, I would remove them and get rid of them so that the dogs don't eat them, because you don't want them to get, you know, the toxins from those structures. But other than that, I kind of think they're cool looking. And again, there's not much you can do about it in terms of them being pathogens. The infections have already occurred, and they've got a ready food source at that point. Otherwise, they wouldn't be producing the fingers, because, again, that's a reproductive structure. But I just kind of enjoy them when I see them, because I think they look quite cool.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Jane emailed, one branch near the ground on one of her lilac bushes has leaves that are curled and folded in. The rest of the leaves on the bush look normal. And so these are near the ground. What could be causing this?
I would be concerned. It depends on whether the leaves are green or brown. If they're green and kind of folded, if you happen to have, say, a lawn care service or it applied some sort of weed and feed product to your lawn near the shrubs, those products contain herbicides. And if you had a little bit of drift to those lower branches, you might see some folding of the leaves. The other thing I would look for if there were herbicide issues would be kind of a curlicuing of the petioles, those stems on the leaves. It's a typical symptom that we'll see. If you're starting to see kind of abnormal growth in the leaves and you see a lot of browning associated with it, you could be seeing the start of a fungal disease called septorial leaf spot that we have seen the last, we saw a lot of it last year, not so much in 2023 because it was too dry. But last year we saw a lot of that disease, but that will cause browning on the leaves.
Brian Huddleston, our guest today, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. He's our guest. And again, join him, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. You're listening to Garden Talk here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at plant diseases with our guest, Brian Huddleston. Great to have him back. Just a quick mention, next week on Garden Talk, we'll visit with the author of Gardening Can Be Murder and then look at caring for succulents. But right now, zeroing in on plants and plant diseases with Brian. And you can join us at 800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go back to apple scab for a minute or two, Brian. How typically is it loss of leaves that's the identifying feature?
You can see symptoms before you start to see that leaf loss, but oftentimes people start to notice scab when the leaves start to drop off the trees. But what I would look for would be, at least initially, some spotting on the leaves. It'll be kind of diffuse and dark in color. And oftentimes you'll have patches of that across the leaves. Oftentimes you'll get yellowing of the leaves as well. And I have seen some examples where the leaves are yellow, but you don't see any obvious indication of the fungus on those leaves. I have to look at it microscopically. I take a piece of tape and plastered onto the leaf and peel it off, and then I look for spores of the fungus. And then eventually, as the disease progresses, then that's when you get the loss of leaves. And the trees, if it's a susceptible variety, they can totally defoliate by roughly mid-season. So as we get into July, you'll see a large number of crab apples that don't have any leaves on them, and those are the susceptible varieties.
Are there some good varieties that are really not susceptible to it?
There are. I don't know the names of them off the top of my head. What I normally tell people to do is look around in their neighborhood for trees that are maintaining their leaves at late into the growing season, and then check with their neighbors to see which variety it is, and then go to your local garden center or nursery and select a different variety from what your neighbors have, but that's rated at the nursery for having scab resistance. And the reason I say that is there was one variety that was introduced probably about 20 years ago called Prairie Fire.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful crabapple tree, beautiful blossom, very profuse bloomer, and had been bred for resistance to apple scab. And it was such a beautiful tree, and apple scab resistance, everybody was looking for that. everybody planted that particular variety. And what happened is we set up a little scientific experiment where we started to select for variants of the apple scab fungus that could overcome that resistance. So now if you look at Prairie Fire nowadays, it doesn't look that resistant to scab. So in my mind, you want to kind of diversify which varieties you have out there that have resistance to scab. Try to deploy different genetics in the different varieties so that you kind of prevent that resistance development from occurring. So we see this very often when we get varieties that are super popular and they have disease resistance. Oftentimes, eventually, that resistance fails.
Mike in Wausau has a question or comment, I believe. Let's go there. Mike, hi.
Hi. I've noticed in my yard and just walking around the neighborhood, we have a lot of healthy-looking maple leaves that have just fallen. I'm wondering if that's disease-related or if that's just, like, weather-related?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that could be going on, and neither of them is really disease-related. What I would do if you see those, I'm assuming the leaves are nice and green. If that's the case, then I would check the petioles, those stems on the leaves, to see whether they look like they're the full length or whether they've been clipped off. If they've been clipped off, there's an insect pest. Maple petiole borer, I believe, is the name of the insect that will come in and will kind of clip those leaves off. Sometimes what we see in trees, not so much in maples, I see this phenomenon more commonly on ash trees, is that we get a loss of green leaves, usually around the end of May, early June. And people have looked at this in ash trees over the years to see whether there's an insect or a disease that's causing this premature, basically healthy leaf loss. Nobody's been able to find anything. And kind of the general thought is that the trees overproduce leaves and then they compensate by dropping a few of them as we get farther into the growing season, leaves that really aren't being that efficient in terms of photosynthesizing for the trees. There was one other thing I was going to mention, and now it's flown out of my head, but I'll think of it in a bit. Oh, the other thing, if I would also take a look at whether it's individual leaves, are you seeing little branch tips with several leaves on them that have fallen off? If you're seeing that with branches, it could be squirrel activity. And yeah. We see squirrels that'll get into the trees and they'll nip off the ends of the branches, and then you'll get a cluster of leaves that'll come off the trees. Now, I've seen that in maples as well. We had an example of that coming to the clinic this spring.
Mike, thank you for calling. Brenda in Richland Center will give you a chance. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So we have three paper white birches in our yard, and a couple of years ago, one of them, something got it. I don't know, it like it would go like a whole branch would die and then the next branch. So we cut it off, we cut it down, and now it's on another one. And I don't know what to do with it. What do you think it is? And will it get to our maple trees too?
Yeah, if you saw that on maples, I would have a disease cause for you. On birch trees, though, I think more likely it could be an insect problem again.
Bronze birch borer,
bronze
maybe?
Bronze birch borer, yeah.
Birch leaf
is my
minor.
First thought. Yeah. If the branches are dying back, I'd be more inclined to think bronze birch borer. That particular insect tends to attack stressed birch trees. And if you happen to have those trees in full sun, or in an area where they're getting a lot of water stress, then that's attractive to those insects. And they will come in and they tend to cause the branches, sections of the tree to die. Now, if you started to see that sort of symptomology on a maple or on other types of trees, ash trees, magnolia trees, if you grow redbuds, redbud trees, tree lilacs, or even shrub lilacs, kind of a sectional dieback of the tree, then there's a disease called verticillium wilt. It's fungal again. The fungus, it's called verticillium, hangs out in the soil and infects through the root system, colonizes the water conducting tissue and blocks it off. So it prevents water movement from the roots up into the branches, and that will lead to a wilting and dieback. And that disease tends to be fatal. Once the trees are infected, eventually they will become totally infected and everything will die. And then you have to be a bit careful about what you replant in that area, because the fungus will hang around in the soil for an extended period of time.
Brenda, does that help?
Well, if it's the birch borer, how do we treat that?
Yeah, that would be a question for my compatriot in the entomology department, PJ Leash. He's my counterpart, does insect diagnostics, and I would give him a shout. His email is pleash, so pleesch at wisc.edu. And he may want to see some photos or perhaps some branches in order to actually look for evidence of the insect before he makes any sort of recommendation. But again, if you have those trees sited in a less than optimal area in your yard and they're under a lot of stress all the time, there may not be a lot you can do. It's that inappropriate placement when they're planted that oftentimes is the issue. So you want to give birches a bit of shade and cooler area and make sure they're getting plenty of water to keep them well hydrated so they don't go under water stress.
Yeah, paper birch are notoriously planted in
finicky.
Yeah, they're finicky, and then if they get planted someplace where
they're beautiful trees, so everybody wants them out where everybody can see them, and that tends to be in the middle of the yard where it's hot and dry with grass growing all the way up to the base, so they're getting starved for water because the grass is sopping up all the moisture, and they just don't do well in that environment.
You described the paper birch that I had two houses ago to a T.
They're beautiful trees, I can understand. The other tree where I see this happen is a pagoda dogwood, which is really an understory tree. It likes a lot of shade, cooler conditions, relatively moist soils. And again, it's got this beautiful horizontal branch structure that makes it look really pretty. It looks like it has layers in the trees, and it's such a, and it blooms as well, has these clusters of white flowers, and it's a very pretty tree. So everybody wants to show it off. And again, it ends up in the middle of the yard with grass around it under totally inappropriate environmental conditions. And then it gets stressed and becomes susceptible to a disease called golden canker. So if you've got a pagoda dogwood and you start to see the branches on that tree die back and they're kind of a gold color, oftentimes with little orange spots, you're dealing with this golden canker disease.
Brenda, thank you so much for calling. Marianne in the Twin Cities, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hello, I have a question about a columbine, because I've been over the last 3 years trying to increase the number of perennials, and I have a blue columbine that I planted last year. And it came up this spring, had beautiful, beautiful flowers. And of course, you know, it's early, so now it's full of seed pods. But over the course of a week that I was gone, all the leaves are gone.
Yeah,
and it's just like little stick fingers. Now, is that a disease or is that an insect? And is the plant dead?
That's an insect problem. And that, from what I understand, won't kill the plant. If it would defoliate from this insect year after year after year, then it will probably get stressed to the point where it won't survive. If it only happens a single year, then I'm less worried about that. Again, I don't know enough details on that particular insect to provide you with good information on management. That would be another question for PJ, my counterpart in the insect world. But I've seen that. The other thing I see commonly on columbine is leaf miner. So if you have intact leaves, but you see all of these little trails in the leaves, that's another type of insect that can cause problems. I think the one that chews off the leaves, that may be a larva of a sawfly of some kind. Don't quote me on that, but that's my recollection from when I've heard PJ talk about that.
Yeah, and again, the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, you can get to PJ through that as well, and he can help you, may be able to help you out even more.
Yeah, great guy.
Yeah.
So definitely contact him if you have questions about insect-related things.
You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Mary in Eau Claire emailed, just wanted to compliment you on your fun book on plant diseases, Limerickettsia. Well-written, fun poems, artwork, great, and very informative. So there you go, from Mary in Eau Claire.
Yeah, we sell that as a fundraiser for the clinic. So if you're interested in taking a look, there's some sample pages on my clinic website, and there's an order form there if you'd like to order a copy.
Yeah, it's a cool book. Mel emailed, his 20-year-old serviceberry recently died with fungus on the bark. His new serviceberry was just planted. Should he spray the new Regent serviceberry with the dormant oil in the early spring? Is Zeme oil okay?
Yeah, without knowing exactly what the problem is, I doubt whether dormant oil would, if you actually had a disease issue, and it sounds like there may have been some winter injury and maybe a fungal colonization of the trunk of that old serviceberry. That's my first thought, because serviceberry in my mind is pretty not prone diseases. I recommend serviceberry a lot because it doesn't tend to get a lot of diseases. But dormant oils really typically are not particularly useful for plant diseases. That tends to be more of a treatment that you would use for certain types of insects. And neem oil, I would not necessarily use that unless you have an actual diagnosis of some sort of disease, and it would most likely be a leaf disease. And I'm not a super big fan of neem oil for disease control, even up for leaf diseases. I don't necessarily think they work the best for disease control, although some people swear by them. But my experience with them has been you get marginal control. And again, I'd prefer that you only apply materials if you actually have a diagnosis and know exactly what you're dealing with. And typically, if you get the diagnosis, you're going to be waiting until the next growing season to make applications, because any sort of fungicide, any sort of chemical treatment that you're making for diseases, they help prevent infections. They do not cure existing infections. So applying something after you see symptoms really doesn't do you much good. It's kind of a waste of time and money and
money.
Product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so definitely get an appropriate diagnosis for what the disease is. Get a sense of whether you really need to be spraying for that particular disease, because lots of times you can get good control by doing cultural things like good fall cleanup and maybe pruning some in the tree or shrub to get better airflow. Or if you're planting a new garden, proper plant spacing, all of those things can impact whether or not you have diseases.
Lori in Madison, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, we have a bald cypress tree in our yard that we put in. This is, I think, the fourth summer. It was fairly large burlap ball. And it had lovely, lush growth this year. Must have been great conditions. Well, the rains in the past week or so and winds, the branches have sort of drooped down, bent down almost like a willow tree, nearly to the ground. They haven't broken, but they've sort of flopped down with, I think, the weight of the water on the fronds. And so we're wondering if we should tie the branches up. Will it recover? What might we do?
Yeah, oftentimes if you have some sort of weighting issue, so something's weighting the branches down, once those weights dissipate, we normally see this in the wintertime when we get a lot of snow.
Yeah.
And the big plant where I see this on is arborvitae. And typically if that, whatever's weighing the branches down goes away relatively quickly, the branches will recover and they'll bend back up and you'll get back to the shape of the tree that you had before you had that weight. You could potentially try and put some string or some other cording. I would use something that's very soft. I think some of the better material to use is if you have old things like pantyhose or something that's of that sort of consistency that's not real abrasive. You can use that to kind of tie up the branches and that will help them recover. Keep in mind, again, that you don't want something that's really abrasive because you are going to have wind. And if it's an abrasive substance, you can actually end up with physical damage to the bark on the branches. So you need to be careful if you want to do that. But I would be inclined at this point to kind of let things go, just watch it. If you don't see the branches recovering in the next couple of weeks, then you might want to consider trying to tie things out tie things up, but do be careful when you do that.
Lori, thank you for calling. Let's go to Dennis in Two Rivers next. Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. Hey, Brian, if I understood correctly, you talked before about a disease that makes a plant more attractive to it. So I was thinking, well, if there are diseases that are attractive to plant, to invaders like insects or animals, the thing is people need to know first about that disease to treat that so it doesn't just keep cropping up and attracting the predators again. Would that be accurate?
There are certain diseases where we see oftentimes there are diseases where there are insects involved that will move the pathogen around. And so, yes, certainly if you get the disease under control, then you don't get this transmission by the insect. The one that comes to mind that I've been seeing a lot of cases of here recently is a disease called fire blight. It's a bacterial disease that we see on crab apples and pears. And when a tree is infected, oftentimes the bacterium will cause cracks in the bark and will ooze out with sap onto the surface of the branches. And that tends to be attractive to pollinators, particularly honeybees, that will come and feed on that ooze that's coming out of the branches. They'll pick up the bacterium on their bodies. And then as they move around and pollinate, they actually drop off the bacterium in the flowers and the bacterium infects through the flowers. So if you can prune out those infected branches and get rid of them so you don't have that oozy material, that can really reduce the amount of spread of that particular disease-causing organism and cut back on the amount of fire blight that you're seeing. There are other types of diseases that are where the pathogens are insect transmitted. A lot of viruses can be moved around by insects. So if you have any plant that looks like it has virus symptoms, so that would include kind of blotchy colored leaves or leaves that are curled or cupped or distorted or kind of bubbly looking, those can indicate virus diseases. I would be inclined to remove those plants and get rid of them so that if it is an insect transmitted virus, those insects can't visit those plants, pick up the virus and move it around. And the other disease that I worry a little bit about this year, because we had a fair amount of it last year and it can carry over in perennials, is aster yellows. Your previous guest talked about purple coneflower, which I agree is just a wonderful, wonderful plant, but it's quite prone to this disease called aster yellows. The pathogen is what's called a phytoplasma, and it's a bacterium-like organism. It tends to be moved around by leaf hoppers. In the case of aster yellows, by the aster leaf hopper. And those insects have kind of mouth parts like straws, and they'll insert it into the food conducting tissue inside the plant. And as they're sucking out sap, they're dropping off these phytoplasmas. Mm. And they cause the bizarre symptoms. So leaf growth distortions, yellowing of foliage. On purple coneflower, you'll get these green leafy flowers, oftentimes with a little bouquet of secondary flowers that'll pop up off the cone. And those plants are permanently infected, so you want to get rid of them so that as you have leafhoppers come into your yard, they don't acquire that organism and then move around to other plants. So definitely trying to keep the diseases under control. For some diseases, particularly if they're moved around by insects, that can be very critical.
Kurt in Sister Bay, it's your turn. Kurt, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks. Great to talk to both of you, and great timing for me. I have about 13 acres of land, primarily white pines, but I'm having an issue with my red pines. They're about 30 feet tall, and they're dying branch by branch, scattered around the tree, and started last fall, and now some of them have died completely, but others are starting to have the same issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've looked at the needles. I've looked at the bark. I can't see any insects. I haven't seen any anything unusual.
Sure. Yeah. What I would suggest would be to get a sample of some of those dead and dying branches into my clinic for a confirmative diagnosis. But my first thought of what you're dealing with is a disease called diplodia shoot blight. It's a fungal disease, tends to be, red pine is a good host. We see it a lot in urban settings on Austrian pine. That's probably the most problematic pine species where I see this. The fungus tends to infect through the needles to the shoots. And one of the things I oftentimes look for kind of as a diagnostic tool is if you look at the needles at the tips of the branches, do you see needles that are of different lengths? And if you do, that's another kind of clue that you're dealing with this disease, because the fungus comes in, it'll kill a part of the growing point, the shoot of the branch, and those needles will die first. So they'll be shorter, and then others at the tip will be able to grow a little bit longer before they're killed off. The other thing to look for with this disease is a lot of sap production on the infected branches. So if you're seeing masses of sap, that's another indicator. But the reason you said you were looking very carefully for things, the reason why you're not seeing anything if it is this disease is that what you have to look for is microscopic. So what I'm gonna look for if you send me a sample is little tiny reproductive structures of the fungus. And then inside those are little itty bitty brown spores that are very diagnostic of the disease. So if you're dealing with that, again, it's really, in a forested area, it's difficult to manage because usually I'm dealing with individual trees where my recommendation will be to prune out the diseased branches. And then if you want to follow up with some fungicide treatments, once you've done that pruning, then that can oftentimes help. In a more forested setting, you're probably not going to want to do the fungicide treatments. You're probably not going to be able to do the pruning very easily. So kind of your option is to look at that stand and see whether you can thin it at all. If you thin, you typically get better airflow. You will tend to get more rapid drying of the needles on the plants, which will tend to reduce the number of infections that you will see. The timing of you seeing this is kind of interesting and consistent with what's known about the disease, in that we had that drought back in 2023. And this fungus is around all the time. It does require some wetness on the needles to infect, but once it gets into the tree, if you put trees under stress, particularly drought stress, the fungus tends to be more aggressive and tends to colonize the trees more rapidly than if you have an infected tree that's getting a lot of water and isn't under stress. So it's going to be a challenge to manage that disease in a forested setting. You may just have to let it go its course and take out the trees. You'll get some natural thinning that way, and hopefully at least a fair proportion of the trees will survive and may have a little bit of the disease, but will not get killed off.
All right. Kurt, thank you very much for calling. Brian Huddleston, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk. For those insect questions that have been coming up, I should mention that P.J. Leash will be back on the show on Wednesday, July 16th. So a couple of weeks off, but P.J. will be back on July 16th. Right now, as we look at plant diseases with Brian Huddleston, you can join in 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Terry in Rome, Wisconsin, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry and Brian. I've got several maple trees on my property, the Blaze Maple, that range between 12 and 20 feet high. And the lower leaves seem to be developing like a raised pimple. They're kind of a reddish pimple on the leaves that turn darker as they continue to progress. What am I dealing with and how to get rid of it?
Yeah, I'm glad I listened to PJ talk, you know, on occasion, because so many of the questions today have been insect questions that I at least have a basic knowledge of. Those are what you're probably seeing are insect galls. There are certain types of insects that will lay their eggs in on maple leaves. Oaks actually are a great host for all kinds of different insect galls on the leaves. But there are some of these galls that will form on maple trees. They tend to be kind of pink in color, as you described. They're really a cosmetic issue, so there's nothing you need to do about them. They really don't cause any damage to the trees. And you may see these some years, you may see them, not see them other years. So just kind of try to learn to ignore them. They're not going to cause a significant problem to the tree.
Terry, thank you. Barb in Milwaukee will go to you now. Hi, Barb.
I have a queen And this year, many of the leaves are being misformed. They're kind of folding on themselves and crinkling up. And I noticed a slight gray discoloration. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do about that.
It's Queen of the Prairie. We had a little trouble with you hearing it at first, but Queen of the Prairie.
Are they looking kind of grayish in color? Did you say that?
Yes.
Yes. I'm wondering if you may be having a problem with powdery mildew. Queen of the Prairie is a great host for that particular fungal disease, and it can cause relatively severe problems. And you get this fungal growth along the surface of the leaf. It'll often be whitish to grayish in color. It could potentially cause some leaf growth distortions as well, depending upon when the infections have occurred. Not much you can do about it at this point in the season, other than once the plants die back in the fall, I would attempt to remove that leaf debris. That's where the fungus hangs out over the winter, although that won't totally take care of the problem, because the other place where powdery mildew fungi can hang out is in the overwintering buds for next year's growth. It will really vary from year to year how much powdery mildew you will typically see, although our summer weather in Wisconsin tends to be pretty good for powdery mildew because we have relatively dry conditions and it gets really muggy. That's what powdery mildew fungi really, really like. They don't like a lot of rain. But when we get into midsummer, where our rains kind of stall out and it gets our typical Wisconsin muggy July weather, these fungi will be active and doing their thing. If this is a really important plant to you, there is a kind of a home remedy. It's actually based on some research out of Cornell University that you could use as a preventative treatment. You wouldn't apply it now. You'd start applying it to the plant next year when it's still healthy looking. And it's a combination of a tablespoon and a half of baking soda and 3 tablespoons of a lightweight horticultural oil mixed in a gallon of water. And lightweight horticultural oils, those tend to be the ones that are paraffin-based oils. If you kind of want to go super organic with this and use a kitchen oil, I would suggest trying canola oil, because there's some research that indicates that canola oil on its own has some anti-powdery mildew properties. And again, you spray the plants before you see symptoms. That's very, very important. Again, fungicides are not curative. They help prevent infections. They don't cure existing infections. It's also very critical that you get good, even coverage on the leaves. So upper surface, lower surface, to get good control. And you would probably have to go out and apply this product about every 7 to 10 days through the growing season to keep the plants looking relatively healthy. It's a fairly low impact treatment, relatively easy to mix up and apply. You could put it in like a spritz bottle.
Yeah.
And spritz it on the plants. So it's one of the few fungicide treatments that I kind of will routinely recommend to folks if you have one or two plants that you really want to want to protect from powdery mildews.
Yeah. Barb, thank you for calling. Perry in Oconto, your turn now. Hi, Perry.
Yes. I have a question about trimming tree branches. Now, I know it's probably like the worst time of the year to do it, but if you're forced to, maybe a branch you neglected to trim is now reaching out into the sidewalk or something. Anything you can do to be better health for the tree? Is there a weather pattern or anything that helps, or you just take chances?
Yeah, in general, I recommend doing pruning in the wintertime when disease-causing organisms are active. If you're absolutely desperate to prune off a branch, then I would definitely wait until we have a period where there are going to be several days where it's really warm and dry. You really don't want to prune when there's a lot of moisture around, because that cut wound that you've made on the tree by pruning is a potential entry point for disease-causing organisms, particularly wood rot organisms that you really don't want to establish in your trees. So you want a long enough period for that wound that you've created to kind of naturally dry out. And then that drier surface will not be a great environment for disease-causing organisms. In general, we don't recommend using pruning paints when you prune. The exception is with oak trees. I really suggest only pruning oaks in the wintertime, but if you're absolutely desperate and need to cut off a branch for some reason during the growing season, have a can of paint right next to you as you make that pruning cut and paint over that wound. We really worry about with oaks, about oak wilts. It's a fungal disease, and that particular pathogen is moved around by sap beetles, and they can be attracted to wounds on oak trees very, very quickly. There's some research that indicates within about 10 minutes you can have sap beetles visit a prune on an oak tree. So you need to have that paint there as a physical barrier to basically make that wound not attractive to the sap beetles, and that'll help prevent transmission of this oak wilt fungus. But definitely, if you're interested in pruning a tree branch, I suggest you go to the UW Extension Horticulture website. There's a nice fact sheet there on pruning deciduous trees, and it tells you exactly how to do that. There's a three-point cut technique that you can use to minimize any damage that you might do to the tree by pruning off the branch, and follow those instructions. But again, do it when it's dry, if you have to do it now.
Perry, thank you. Luann in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Luann.
Hi. I have two questions, if that's all right.
We'll see if we can get you in.
Okay. I have a small peach tree that has red spots on the leaves. What can I do?
Yeah, that's the peach leaf curl disease that we talked about earlier. And my recommendation, since we talked about that earlier, would be visit my clinic website and just look up the UW Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic and search in the main menu on the left side of the main page for our fact sheet series, and look up the fact sheet on peach leaf curl. Take a look at that. And then if you have questions after you've read that, my email is on there. You're welcome to give me an email shout, and we can talk a little bit more about that disease. And your second question?
My second question is, my raspberries have not bared fruit for a couple of years. And they're older. They're not real old plants, but they're mature plants. Could they be too close to the cedar trees?
I don't know that unless you're getting a lot of shading. Sometimes the issue with raspberries not fruiting can be they need to be pruned routinely. And so for information on that, I would go to do a search on the UW Extension Learning Store. And there's a really wonderful publication there called Growing Raspberries in Wisconsin that'll talk about how to grow plants, prune raspberries, so that you can get good fruit. From a disease standpoint, one of the issues that we see with raspberries, as they have been in the ground for an extended period of time, they tend to get infected with a variety of different types of viruses. And as that viral load builds up, then they tend to stop producing really good fruit. The fruit you'll get lesser numbers of fruit, and then also the fruit that you do get really crumbly. So that could be a contributing factor as well.
Luann, thank you. And then in 30 seconds or so, Bill in Oregon has his milkweed early and abundant on the property, but the stems are wilting from the top down. Doesn't see aphids or insects.
Yeah, hard to predict on that one. I need to see a sample. It could be a root issue of some kind. I've never seen verticillium wilt in milkweed, but I can't rule that out. That's a disease I talked about earlier. That fungus tends to have a wide host range. I've not seen it on that host, but I can't rule that out. But I would think possibly some sort of, from a disease standpoint, some sort of root issue of some kind.
Yeah, that makes sense. And on that note, Brian, thank you so much for coming by. We'll do it again.
Okay, sounds good.
In the meantime, appreciate it very much. Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. Great to have him with us. And thank you so much for listening in. We had a great team of people who put our shows on every day. Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our producers. Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins with us as well. As technical directors, our executive producer, Jill Nadol. I'm Larry Mueller. I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.